from Springfield. This is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois' state government and politics.
Governor Bruce Rauner and his position on abortion has critics and supporters reacting today, and it comes as the campaign for governor heats up.
Governor Rauner is promising to veto an abortion protection bill despite describing himself as a pro-choice Republican.
It defrauds every voter who took him at his word and mistakenly believed him to be an honest man.
So far, the big union, AFSCME, has said no, no way. And they threatened to strike, and I said, well, we're going to do this. We have to do this. And if you, I hope you don't strike. I don't want you to strike, but we're not going to, probably not going to miss you if you go.
Well, Governor Rauner this week, a campaign reversal when it comes to some discussion on an abortion bill. The governor came out and indicated he'd veto a plan if it gets to his desk that would make sure abortion remain legal in Illinois, even if the federal law is overturned, and it would expand taxpayer funding of the procedure as well. We're going to talk more about that. Also, you heard the governor make some disparaging comments there about AFSCME. That and more on the discussion today here on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. And our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie directs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, our State House reporter, Brian Mackey, and in our State House studio with Brian is Doug Finke, State House reporter for Gatehouse Media. Doug, thanks for being with us again.
Happy to be here.
Brian, I'm going to let you sort this out on this abortion legislation. What is behind this piece of legislation? Why is it coming up now? And what has some people upset regarding the governor?
Well, one of the reasons the supporters say it's coming up now is the election of President Trump. Change on the Supreme Court is what they point to, and this possibility that at some point you could lose the majority for protecting abortion rights on the U.S. Supreme Court. Frankly, the successful nomination and taking his place of Neil Gorsuch does not actually change the votes on abortion because he replaces the late Justice Scalia, who was also opposed to abortion, and it's presumed that Gorsuch would pretty much vote along those lines. But should Justice Kennedy decide to retire on the U.S. Supreme Court, there's a thought that the majority for upholding Roe versus Wade from the 70s might collapse and that the Supreme Court could go in a different direction on that. And there is people disagree on the interpretation of this, but the backers of this legislation say there's a trigger provision in Illinois law that should Roe versus Wade ever be overturned, abortion would sort of revert to being illegal in Illinois. And one of the things this bill does, we can talk about the expansion of state funding for abortion separately, but one of the things this bill would do is remove that so-called trigger provision in Illinois law.
So a lot of people are saying the governor had agreed earlier that he would uphold abortion rights in the state if something like that ever happened, if the federal law was overturned. Doug, did the governor go back on his word?
Well, certainly the pro-abortion rights people believe he did that. They have produced an ad that was taken out during the gubernatorial campaign in which these groups cited a questionnaire that the governor had filled out, saying that it indicated he supported abortion rights, and that's why they at that time said that there was no reason for people to reject Rauner or because of his position on abortion rights, that at least he supported them as they believed it. So,
and what's the governor say about this?
Well, he issued a statement last week. I don't know that I haven't heard him asked directly about it. He hasn't had, I don't think, any sort of open press availabilities that I've seen since this, since the pro-abortion group came out with this statement midweek this week. But last week he said that there's too much of a divided opinion in Illinois on public funding for abortion, which is, we should say, is the other aspect of this bill. You alluded to that at the top of the show, Sean. Not only would it repeal that trigger provision, but it would also allow for Medicaid recipients as well as state employees through the state employee health insurance plan to have access to abortion. There's a situation now where if you work for certain governments in Illinois or if you're, say, on the U of I student plan, I think you can have access to the abortion procedure, should you choose to, or it become necessary for you to have that, and the If you're a state employee, though, you don't have that access. If you're on Medicaid, you don't have that access. And the governor, apparently, in this questionnaire he answered for one of these pro-abortion rights groups 2 years ago, said that he thought that was not right, that it was a sort of a economic discrimination, if you will, on the lower income people who have Medicaid for their health insurance. And so he said that now he says there's too much of a divided opinion on that. And so he is sort of, he didn't say withdrawing his support, but effectively changing his position. And he has promised to veto that legislation.
Charlie, let me bring you in because you've covered this issue really since Roe versus Wade and that decision came down. Illinois is one of those states that for years has really been, I guess you would consider it a pro-choice state. And there's always a little bit of ways to, you know, appease other people, including, like you were talking about, the taxpayer fund to keep that out of the law. So in this case, is the governor just trying to walk that tightrope that has been out there forever in the state of Illinois?
I think, as we've seen, you know, for the last several weeks, he's in full campaign mode. And this is an issue that is very contentious. Back in my days as a reporter, there was sort of a song and dance that the legislature would go through with Governor Thompson and Governor Edgar. They would pass restrictive language to limit women's reproductive choices. The governor would veto it, they would override it, and the federal courts would throw it out. And the constituents who were very much against abortion were pleased because their lawmakers had attempted to limit or ban the procedure, and it was all the fault of those crummy federal courts. And as I say, everybody knew it was going to happen. They went through this routine, and then things changed when the Supreme Court allowed certain restrictions, and suddenly these votes became real. And in Illinois, when right after Roe versus Wade, there were actually no regulations, no limitations, and the pro-choice people and the anti-abortion people reached agreement on certain, what would you say, certain conditions in terms of these procedures have to be done in a medical setting, certain things to protect the health and safety of the woman. And these were written into the law. And part of that was this trigger provision that in essence says if Roe versus Wade is ever overturned, then abortion is illegal. Now, the people who are against the proposed legislation say that, well, the trigger mechanism in and of itself won't make abortion illegal in Illinois because there's nothing else in the statutes that would do so. In other words, you'd have to pass substantive legislation in addition to the trigger mechanism to actually ban abortion in Illinois. But it's a very contentious issue, and I suspect, as you said earlier, the governor is trying to walk this fine line. He and his wife are, for example, are among the major donors to the Planned Parenthood fundraiser, and he's trying to have it both ways.
And Brian, I want to make clear on that. I don't think we can sit here and say that the governor is so anti-abortion, you know, that he's against abortion rights because of things like we've seen in the past and the fact that financially he and his wife are supporting Planned Parenthood. So where does he fall along that line? I mean, I know opponents are going to attack him certain ways. How can we describe him to people as his position on this?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that people, I saw one Democrat, I think it was the sponsor, Representative Feigenholz, and I'm just going off my memory here, but said something like, oh, baloney, that he's not, or that he is pro-choice. He was lying to people. I mean, in a sense, I don't know that it really matters what's in his heart, right? And he has said this before. During the campaign in 2014, he was pressed on the issue of gay marriage. There was a Chicago Tribune editorial board where one of the members kept going after him and saying, well, really, what's in your heart? What's in your heart? And he would say, doesn't matter. And I think that that's probably what we can tell listeners is that, they'll have to decide for themselves if this is an issue they care about. I mean, the governor can believe one thing and decide that politically it makes more sense for him to appease or satisfy whatever the term is you want to use, the people in his coalition, the hardcore social conservatives who have very deeply held beliefs against abortion. And he's choosing to go along with that. And what we've heard is that a number of anti-abortion legislators went to the governor and said, look, we've been with you on a lot of other things in these past 2 years. It's been a difficult go of a time to be a politician in Illinois, and we want you to be with us on this. And the governor decided that that was the best strategy for him in this case. And but it could make things difficult as he is going into the reelection campaign. I mean, he worked very hard 2 years ago to portray himself as a social moderate. There was a TV ad where his wife said he doesn't have a social agenda. So, I mean, he's going to have to reckon with this. And I'm sure the Democrats will continue to try and, you know, as they're looking for ways to gain a political advantage, they will continue to try to put him on the spot on this issue.
Doug, let me go to you on a different topic here, and that involves the state budget impasse, which continues on. Lawmakers have been out of session on break here for the last 2 weeks. But that doesn't mean there's not been some fallout. Universities have been warned by one rating agency that they're going to be downgraded because of their credit rating because of the impasse. In fact, another credit rating agency, S&P, has already taken some action against a few universities. So this is the backdrop as lawmakers return to session, and they'll be in session for the rest of the spring here, all the way to May 31st. Does this move the needle at all when it comes to trying to get a budget deal?
Well, it hasn't for the last 2 years, so I don't know that it's going to do it this time. Before they left for their two-week spring break, the House passed a stopgap spending measure that would provide some money for higher education and for human services. That bill, as I understand it, has now been transmitted to the Senate, so they can take it up when they come back. Whether they do or not, it's unclear at this point. There are people, a lot of Republicans at least, who think that if they do another stopgap, that's going to take the pressure off of them trying to come up with a bigger budget proposal. There are Democrats who disagree with that. They said, they rightfully point out that there is money sitting in accounts, just collecting dust basically at this point, that could be used for these human services and higher education, you might as well go ahead and appropriate it and let the money go out the door. And they said that that will not take any pressure off from doing a bigger budget proposal. But again, whether a credit downgrade is going to move anybody, again, it hasn't done it so far, so why would you expect it to happen now?
You mentioned the accounts and the money sitting in there. I think for some people that's hard to fathom when they hear about all the problems and the backlog of bills the state has. Can you explain, if not in great detail, what each of these accounts are, at least how that money gets accrued that way?
Yeah, there's a provision that a certain amount of small amount of the income tax revenues that are collected and are constantly coming into the state are diverted to a fund for human services and a fund to support education. Those are paraphrased titles for those two funds. But the money goes there and it just sits in an account until it's appropriated by the General Assembly. Obviously, income tax revenue comes in constantly throughout the year, so these funds get replenished constantly. And until the General Assembly passes an appropriation bill to spend this money, it just sits there.
You know, I was thinking of, a metaphor for this. This is not like your retirement savings. This is not your kids' college fund. This is like a health savings account. It's money that you have set aside for a purpose. And now the state, you know, what Democrats are saying, and I think Republicans would agree, is that we have these bills to pay. They're actually health bills. They're related to the purpose of this special fund. And what Democrats are saying, well, that money's sitting there. Let's spend it. The Republicans are saying, no, that, as Doug said, that takes the pressure off. We got to leave that money in the health savings account until we can get, you know, our overall finances straightened out, and then we can spend it. I would point out that the same Republicans who are saying that we, you know, that would take pressure off have also, a lot of them have separately supported a measure that would ensure state employees are paid basically in perpetuity if the court ordering that state employees be paid without a budget ever gets overturned. So they are definitely at variance in their positions on what things they want to contribute to pressuring the situation. I would also point out that both Democrats and Republicans decided to take a huge piece of pressure off the budget negotiations when they agreed to fund elementary and secondary schools both last year and this year. So there's a lot of people taking different positions that seem to be somewhat inconsistent here.
And Charlie, used to be when we would start down this path of them coming back from a break in the mid spring here and going into the late spring to try to get their session done. This was always the time you started to watch the high level negotiations really heat up on a budget. Right now, we're sitting here going, maybe there'll be no negotiations. Maybe they'll pass a bill with a little bit of money in it. Maybe they'll come to some big agreement. We don't know. But it's really hard to get your arms around, you know, what's happening at this point.
Well, it's very difficult to do because the whole paradigm has changed. And in fact, we're still waiting for those high level negotiations to flesh out a budget for fiscal year 16, which ended, what, June 30th of last year. And the difficulty seems to be that unlike past administrations, Republican and Democrats, where there was sort of the expectation that we'll go through all this partisan rhetoric and all this campaign talk through the early part of spring, but when we get towards the end of spring and the new fiscal year is looming, we'll set all that nonsense aside and we'll sit down and we'll work out some arrangement. Neither side, neither the Democrats, who in my day controlled the legislature, or the governor, who in my day tended to be Republican, would get everything they wanted. But each group or each party to the negotiations would come up with something with which they could live, and it would be driven by the desire to get state government funded for the ensuing fiscal year. And so I may have this list of agenda things that I want that I think are very important, but I'm not going to jeopardize the fiscal security of the state and its institutions by holding out until I can get stuff on my wish list that I know the other side is vehemently opposed to.
Doug, let me go to you on when it comes to the universities, and everybody else in this panel is a university employee, in fact, a U of I employee, except for Doug. But when you keep, you know, are you hearing from people, lawmakers or even members of the public, that they're greatly concerned about the higher education system and what's happening there? Or do you think that it's registering enough?
Well, everybody says they're concerned about it. It's a matter of doing something about it. You know, we've heard lawmakers, members of the public, you name it, express concern about any number of things, human services, whatever is currently not being funded by state government or not being funded adequately. And everyone, of course, gives lip service and says, oh, yeah, we're really concerned about that. We've got to do something. But that doesn't translate into action.
The governor said something interesting when he was in the Quad Cities earlier this week, which is that people say this fight's about the budget. We got to get a budget. And he said this fight is not about the budget. This is about the long term stability of Illinois. And I think that it's important to remember that that's his view here. And so while a lot of people are out there worrying about the junk bond status of higher education now and, you know, and this year and making ends meet and the human service agencies closing, I think some people think of that as a short-term problem. You know, the governor says that he is in this for long-term changes that he wants to bring to the state of Illinois, and that he is, you know, focusing beyond the budget. Of course, the damage being done to universities, the damage being done to the human service infrastructure is going to take years, if not decades, to build back out of. But I think it's worth remembering what this fight is really about. As somebody said earlier on the show, you know, the governor has these ideas that he wants to fundamentally, he says, will fundamentally change Illinois government. And the Democrats are vehemently opposed to a lot of them. And here we sit.
And Brian, the governor was also optimistic at the same time, saying that he thinks that some type of grand bargain can be reached. So, I mean, how, you know, does he really believe that, or is this just part of what his message is out on the trail?
Yeah, I was a little surprised at that. nobody that I'm talking to seems to feel like there's a breakthrough just around the corner. And this is not certainly wouldn't be the first time that the governor has sort of expressed, how do I phrase it, like a dispassionate optimism about the negotiations as though he has had no role in them, when, of course, there were coming very close to a vote on February 28th. They had a series of test votes on the grand bargain. Some of the more agreeable items, as many as 10 Republicans supported some combination of those bills. The very next day, it was just down to Leader Redonio in the Senate, and the other Republicans had backed off. And my reporting has shown that the governor had, or his staff had, reached out to some of those Republicans and conveyed his concerns that he didn't think it was a good enough deal yet. So that seems to be the last time we had any significant movement toward this grand bargain. Of course, you never say never, and you never know what will happen. But a lot of people in government this week have been gone. We had Passover, we had Easter. There has not been a lot of reporting about great movement here, so it's not clear to me what exactly the governor is referring to. And I think there is a good possibility that he just does not want to, as he has said, he doesn't, you know, he's gone out of his way to not take the blame for effectively, you know, derailing the grand bargain.
Yeah, and I know there are several Democrats that I've talked to who think this is just a further extension of his campaign mode, that he's going to go around and say that we're close to a deal, we're close to a deal, when in fact there are not discussions going on to bring the deal home. And then when things don't come to fruition, he can say, well, once again, the Democrats are the ones who failed to come to an agreement. And as Brian said, he can avoid any kind of blame or involvement in what happened.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, because I think this is all about trying to affix blame for what everybody knows needs to be done. We're either going to have to make severe, dramatic, deep cuts, or raise revenues considerably, increase the tax burden, or a combination of both. And none of that stuff is going to be popular with the voters back home. And so the desire is to figure out, how can I make my folks back home blame the other guy? Well, I didn't really want to do this, but that nasty Democrat forced me. Or, I didn't really want to do that, but that nasty Republican forced me. Instead of approaching it in what I would say would be a more mature manner, in realizing, yes, we have to do tough things. We'll sit down, we'll work out an agreement. And as happened with every other, save the most recent one, every other change in the income tax from its initiation back in 1969 on through the increase, the temporary increase that was then made permanent early in Governor Edgar's administration, there was an agreement between the parties. Lawmakers who voted for installing an income tax and then for making increases were people from relatively safe districts, and it was a recognition that we need to do something. And it wasn't so much about trying to figure out how can I make sure that voters blame the other side. It was that together we have to do something for the good of Illinois. And kind of the irony in all this is that the longer you wait, the deeper the cuts, the more revenues that are going to be needed. I, for one, don't think it's mathematically possible to come up with a balanced budget, in the sense that we end the fiscal year with no backlog of bills and with no red ink on the ledgers. The numbers just don't work out.
Just a couple of minutes left here, and Doug and Brian, I want to go to you on this topic, and that involves the AFSCME union. We heard the governor at the start of the show make some comments about the union members and the possibility of them going on strike. They've already given that authorization, although there's been no date set and we don't know if one will occur. Anything happening that we're hearing on the negotiations with the state's largest public employee union?
No, and I would. I know the union has all along said that they want Rauner to return to the bargaining table and work out a new contract, based on the comments that you played at the start of the show, it certainly doesn't sound like he's headed back to the bargaining table, does it?
No, and I would say the union is prohibited from striking legally while the court case is going on that's playing out. And because that is working its way through the state appellate system, and then it would eventually, presumably, whoever would lose there would have to go to the Illinois Supreme Court. That's going to take quite some time. So I don't think a strike is imminently on the horizon. And as Doug pointed out, the best remedy I think AFSCME could hope for is that they would go back to the bargaining table. And the administration has already indicated that they feel like they've gone as far as they can go. It seems like the real strategy here is to kind of hope to run out the clock on Governor Rauner's term in office.
Well, and certainly we've seen governors in the past who have battled with unions over contracts and different issues. But I thought that comment was rather striking, to not to have a pun there, but in the sense that it basically made it sound like, he really didn't have any respect for state employees at all. I don't know if that's exactly how he feels. That's how it came out, though.
Yeah, I thought it sounded like a very ill-informed thing to say. Nobody's going to miss you. Is his premise, or is he what he trying to convey, that the work that state employees do doesn't require any kind of training, any kind of specialization, any special skills? You can just hire people off the street to do the job that these state employees are doing? I don't think that's true, and I think the constituency is not going to accept that. They're not going to believe that the people who do the technical work at the Department of Transportation or the Department of Revenue, or that are the child abuse caseworkers for the Department of Children and Family Services, or that are the addiction specialists at Human Services, all these people are just so easy to replace. And so, as I say, I think it was a very ill-informed comment on his part.
Let's go to our notes from the field. And, Brian, I'll start with you.
Yeah, Congressman Aaron Schock was back in court, or at least his lawyers were this week, trying to get the identity of a witness from the government and opposing, trying to get some testimony thrown out against him. And he's also just moved to have his entire case dismissed. This is not unexpected. I mean, it's a common tactic before you would go to trial to, try and get your case dismissed. But back in court this week, and that case is continuing to play itself out.
And Doug Finke.
Last week, Pew Charitable Trust came out with a report on state-funded pension systems. The good news is that Illinois only had the third worst funded ratio in the country. There were two other states that were worse. The bad news is it was based on 2015 figures, and according to the state's, Illinois' own financial people, the pension systems have gotten worse since that.
That will do it for today's broadcast. Members of our panel today included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Doug Finke. As always, you can get a podcast of our show. Just go to nprillinois.org. You can also find us on NPR One. Look for State Week. The production assistance for the program today, provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.